CliffCentral.com.
It is burning platform time and the first one of 2024. There is so much on the table to discuss. And I can't think of anyone more incendiary than our good friend, Roman Kabanak. It's nice to see you, my friend. How are you?
Morning. I thought you were going to say insightful.
Yes.
You got the wrong guest. Incendiary.
Incendiary is you. And just own it, because you know what? This is the year of us just calling ourselves what we are. Every time you open your mouth, and I see you on, I still follow, you are one of the few people that I follow on social media and laugh constantly, because you tear into everyone. You love when people make assholes of themselves, which is regularly, especially in the political realm in this country.
Indeed.
You were an original Cliff Central founder alumnus, along with Jonathan Witt, when you started the Renegade Report, which was ahead of its time in so many ways. The two of you, before anyone else had founded any kind of political talk show, you guys were doing some heavy lifting at that stage. It was legendary, gained audience in leaps and bounds. And since then, you've gone on to continue being a lawyer and a shit stirrer in your own capacity. And you do The Morning Shot, which I have to say is a tremendously insightful and useful and informative way to start your day.
Well, thank you very much. The Morning Shot's a YouTube show that myself and my co-host do. And I try to, for the first 2 years, we try to be really serious about South Africa and look at the policies and understand. And now we're just like, you know, this place, we're just going to call it Retail Dunny Stun. Everyone has a very low IQ. From all the political parties are just moronic. A lot of the voters are moronic as well. So we're just like, you know what?
This place, the government you deserve, right?
You get the government you deserve and just have fun.
So I said to Pumi, and this is a great place to launch the conversation. It is an election year. There's a lot going on. I said to Pumi, you love South Africa. And this is one of the reasons I find it fun to engage with you is when I'm feeling low about the things that you just mentioned, you say to me, but this is great. This is what we want. You want an incompetent, incapable government. He's exactly the opposite of Helen Ziller. She believes in the capable state. He believes the best place to be is in an incapable state.
That's right.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
So explain your philosophy to Pumi.
All right. So just very briefly.
And to all of us.
Very briefly. The state is completely broken. And the state, I'm talking about the edifice of, you know, the political realm and the institutions of the realm. Except we don't really have a state anymore. There's no monopoly on violence. There's no basis for any infrastructure. And there was a third thing that determines what a state
does. Don't have borders.
That's right. Borders. That's the third one. We don't have any of those. So we don't physically, literally have a state, philosophically, spiritually, legally. So that means we can do sort of whatever we want. A lot of people use it.
Ultimate freedom.
And a lot of people use it to do crime, right? Which is why we've got such a high crime rate. But for the rest of us, I mean, I've got two children. I've got perhaps many more things on the way. I can't think of any other place I'd rather be other than here, because I can literally homeschool them if I want to. I can send them to any school in the country that I want to if I can pay for it. I can buy as many guns as I want to. I can do whatever I want in this country. And it's fantastic and it's wonderful. And more people should be proud of that.
But the ultimate irony is that you are also a lawyer. So.
Was. I left that last year.
So you're not lawyering anymore?
No, I'm doing other things now.
Okay.
Or more interesting things.
All right.
But yeah, the state doesn't exist. Once you have that in your mind,
so when the rest of us are getting worried about what the elections could deliver, you don't care.
I used to be like that until very recently. But now I just don't care, because irrespective of what happens, the state won't be fixed.
Doesn't matter who takes over.
I mean, John Steenhuis and Helen Ziller can run this country as a theocracy for 10 years. There's no army. There's no borders. There's no police. What are they going to do? Fix a few potholes, maybe? I mean, kudos if that happens, but no.
So you're not looking for what so many in South Africa are, in that they're looking for a government that can fix things, make things work, make things efficient, make the trains run on time, sort out the state-owned enterprises, close the borders and patrol them. Gayton McKenzie's doing that. We must talk about that a little bit this week. He's in a high-vis jacket.
On the border there.
Yeah, at the Limpopo River.
Just think about this.
With his ass crack out.
A politician. just think about this.
Is that your takeaway, is that his ass crack is
out? Oh, my God. I think it's great. I felt violated.
Just think about this. A politician is manning our borders and chucking illegals back into the Limpopo River.
That's proof.
Without any help from the border authority, and police.
And the reason he's doing it is because no one is going to stop him.
Well, it's good politically, and he can do it if
like
he wants to.
There aren't any army people to stop him, so he can do what he wants, which proves your point.
But responding to your question, like deep down, I am very like close to fascist. Like I like closed borders and law and order, and like Nayib Bukele from El Salvador, like he's my hero.
Right.
Oh my God.
But we don't have one of those in South Africa. So if you can't have the best, have nothing. And that's just going to be my view.
All right, Pums, now that he's completely upset the apple cart, we've got to – you can ask him whatever you want to ask him, and let's just set that up. But we've got a bunch of issues. So if you'd prefer, we can just get straight into the subject.
I think it's important this early in the year to kind of pull out – all the things that we are facing, that we're going to see coming at us, not just in South Africa, but throughout the world. And I think that it is fascinating to watch it from whatever point of view. And this is the thing about being in the space that we're in. And so this anarchist point of view, burn it all down. Great. It's important. It's important because...
1 second. I'm not saying burn anything down. It's burning down by itself.
You're not taking any part in that.
And we're not going to reverse it politically. So accept it. Look after yourself and your family and your people. That's it.
Okay. So you become an individual, an isolated, atomized individual in chaos.
Well, that is the big danger. So you shouldn't be that. You should... ensure that, like the July riots in KZN were a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
People found out who all their neighbors were and they stood together across highways.
I still say that was like, that was a big nation building moment.
Very it really much was. So. Yeah. And I've been to KZN since. And you can see that those structures still exist. So don't become an atomized individual. That's what causes the chaos in the first place. Become part of
your community,
your local community.
Play a role in your family. Start with the stuff immediately around you.
Families first.
Because most people start worrying about the president and the nation.
Oh, yeah, no.
These are very big things that are unwieldy.
And they don't care about you whatsoever.
I mean, speak to Cyril.
Or
but you can't escape, even though you're an anarchist, you can't escape paying tax. You can't escape. You can't escape the ordin. You can't get away from the potholes on the roads. You can't get away from inefficiency. Well, okay, so you buy a car that it's expensive. These things. So ultimately, you're saying the only way to insulate yourself from the chaos and anarchy is to have lots of money.
Well, you don't.
Then it's paradise. Is that what you're saying?
Rely on the state at all for anything, which costs a lot of money. Yes. For taxes, if you're self-employed, it's relatively easy to avoid. For the most part. But if you are an employee, it's much more difficult.
Right.
I'm not saying this is going to be easy, but this is just a reality of living in South Africa.
If you're self-employed and operate in a cash only.
Yeah, like you have a spaza shop.
Yeah, if you operate in a cash only environment, then you have some kind of insulation, because don't forget that SARS actually have got permission to go directly into your bank.
They can
access your bank account and get their money.
But remember, SARS only collects 20% of taxes. The rest is all compliance. The commissioner of SARS has admitted this. He only collects 20% of taxes. And it's like customs and commodities stuff.
That's interesting.
But the rest is compliance.
So V. Ruiz wants to know straight up, do you vote and are you going to vote?
I voted for myself.
Yeah, I remember you
in
had
2019.
We had
the capitalist party with
Canton.
Canton Pillay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only... time I voted.
Ever?
Ever, yeah. Absolutely.
All right. A lot of people asking about Gayton, so maybe we start there. Do we have open borders in South Africa? You know, this is a massive story in America at the moment. And I'm always trying to draw parallels so we don't think we're the only country in the world with problems, because there are big problems all over the place. Joe Biden's administration is coming under increased pressure that the southern border is just open. People are just literally walking across the Rio Grande, which is what people do here in the Limpopo. Some get eaten by crocodiles, but lots and lots of people are just walking across the border from
Actually,
Mozambique,
more people,
from Zim,
more
from
people
everywhere.
Coming through those ways of getting into the country are actually injured or killed by elephants than crocodiles.
Oh my God. All right, so there are, at least they don't have those in Mexico and the US. But people are coming here. You could call them refugees. You could call them economic migrants. They're fleeing even worse places than us to come here. You don't think
refugees.
So? Why are you shaking your hand or your head already?
What, refugees from where? Zimbabwe. As far as I know, it's a state. It's democratic. They've got their own money and their own borders. And
I'm not
own
saying
army.
They're legal. I'm not saying they've called themselves
refugees.
There's
no refugees. Such thing as an economic refugee.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Helen Ziller got into trouble for that once, didn't she?
Only if you come from the Eastern Cape, apparently. That's when you're an economic refugee.
All right, so do we have open borders?
No, we have no borders.
No.
Big difference.
We have lots of corruption at the borders. We have insufficient border control. We have a very porous system, Mozambique, Zimbabwe. But that's also not just it, right? Because hence the corruption. Is there also lots of people who get here on a plane? They're not coming across the border from Zimbabwe or Botswana. They also get you on a plane. How do you get from Pakistan to South Africa? You can't walk here.
Yeah.
I think they come via Mozambique as well. But I've spoken to magistrates and police officers, and they keep telling me, like, if you are a victim of a crime and the criminal is an illegal immigrant, don't take him to the police. Because then they go to court, he's out on bail, and they disappear. They don't know who he is. They don't have IDs. There's no identification whatsoever. So you actually take them to Home Affairs. And Home Affairs processes and deports them.
Oh.
But
that's a useful – there we go.
There we go.
First week of the year, and we've got a helpful tip.
Top tip. But there's a lot of story. I know quite a few people, and they keep saying that half the time they're unable to identify perpetrators of crime or suspects or victims of crimes because they're
there's
all –
There's no records.
There's no records. I mean, Home Affairs is a nightmare. We can assume some of those are South Africans, but a huge majority of victims of crimes and perpetrators of crimes cannot be identified. Are they foreign illegal nationals? Probably a lot of them are.
Do you think that Gayton McKenzie is just an opportunist here because he sees a way of embarrassing the government and making people think he's a practical guy who's doing things, or is there more to it than just a bit of posturing and grandstanding and opportunism.
Opportunism.
That's all it is.
Opportunism. That's
and Gayton McKenzie, let's not forget who this guy was before he saw the opportunism in politics, right?
You know, this conflates on a number of issues in South Africa, one of them being the proliferation of new political parties.
Oh my God.
I just saw a thing from the IEC that between September and December of last year, there were an additional, I think, 20 parties that were registered with the IEC, including Roger Jardine.
Yeah, remind me. Both of you.
Do you remember him? Anyway.
We've got to talk about at least two of these. We've got to talk about Roger Jardine and their damp squib launch at the end of last year.
And we're going to talk about the MK party. But what it's indicative of is that we have a vacuum in terms of leadership. So everybody is thinking, there's no leadership, I'm going to do something about it, right? That's the other thing.
Which you've been encouraging.
I still do. I really, really still do.
That's all the grift.
And I think that, what the Patriotic Alliance, which, by the way, was not started by Gayton McKenzie and
Kenny
Kunene, they have just taken it over, essentially. They have seen an opportunity as well. So I think also a grift. And this is one issue that they can bang on about because it seems to resonate. It's a populist issue that is resonating with a lot of people because when you are oppressed, when you are feeling under by every other, what do you look for? You look for a weaker person to beat on. And that's what they're doing.
Well, I'm just glad for once it's not the whites, so I support the PA and the minorities. Like, for everyone else, it's like, oh, the whites did this, the minorities did that. You know, for once, it's like someone else. So I know Gayton. We did a vlog with him in Beaufort West. We did an interview with him. The guy believes what he believes. And the guy does have very good reasons for being anti-immigrant. That's something that he's come into since he started the party and has spoken to his constituency. And a lot of constituencies say, immigrants are just coming in and, you know,
they're taking our jobs.
Taking our jobs and creating spaza shops and doing better than us in some ways.
And people are bitter and resentful.
That's right.
What's been very fascinating to watch with him. What's been very fascinating to watch with him after the big stunt at the river, right? Mm. Is also watching now on social media a very big pushback from lots of Zimbabwean expats, Zimbabweans in South Africa, Zimbabweans in Zimbabwe, and stories around Gayton McKenzie's Zimbabwean exploits or lack thereof, trying to get into Zimbabwe, trying to do business in Zimbabwe, trying to get close to, according to what I'm seeing these reports, trying to get close to Mnangagwa and being part of the gold mafia and being shut out. And that this is why he has this huge vendetta, particularly against Zimbabweans. And this is one of the things that have come up quite often with him and his rhetoric, right? His illegal alien rhetoric is that he has targeted Zimbabweans and doesn't speak much else about all sorts of other foreigners.
Because they're the most obvious sort of illegal foreigners. Like in America, you're not going to say, look at, you know,
Canadians,
Japanese illegal immigrants, you know, the Japanese are coming to take over. No, it's Mexicans or Hondurans or whatever the case
might be. Guatemalans.
And, you know, if you want to do business in Zimbabwe, you have to know the president. Like, guys, this is Africa. Like, why are we thinking rules apply?
So
you have to know the president to do business there. And if you get shut out, you get shut out. But that's the way to do business.
And here, by the sound of things, because...
Or if you know the president here, you lose everything by the sounds of it, but yes.
You lose everything?
The man has no friends. Have you seen him recently? His only friend is Fikile, and Fikile is retarded.
Okay, we'll get to Fikile.
The man has many friends.
So we started with Gayton. I'm rubbing my hands with glee because we've got to talk about the MK party. But before we even get to that, does anyone... Even if he walked past you in the street tomorrow, would you know who Roger Jardine was? And I don't know the guy. I can't say I've met him. I don't have any axe to grind with him. He may be the loveliest person in the world. There are a lot of people I know who speak very highly of him. I cannot tell you anything about Roger Jardine. Can either of you help?
So I've got a story. So this was confirmed by a source of mine. No, this was confirmed by a source of mine. So here was the plan. The plan was for Roger Jardine to become the president of the multi-party coalition, Moonshot Pact, whatever you call it. In return, they needed the DA's buy-in for that. And the DA and the multi-party coalition would have received R1 billion for this to happen. But if you look at Roger Jardine, former UDF guy in Mandela's cabinet as a DG or something like that, the guy's basically an Mbekiite ANC guy.
Okay.
So for me... You bribe the DA with R1 billion, you put Roger Jardine in charge of the Moonshot Pact, you're basically trying to make the opposition nullified. You're making them ANC light, literally. And it didn't work because the DA said, no, we're not. We got principles, we don't care about money. Maybe the only political party in this particular regard.
So they had
to
do something with R1 billion.
Well, they said no to the deal.
Right.
They said no.
No,
to
no.
The deal.
I mean that the people who were offering them this money now had to do something with this money.
Well, they're given $50 million to Jardine to run this damn squib of a political party where him and Rise Mzanzi are on a race to nowhere. Like they're competing against
each other.
Yeah, I mean,
we're never going. Listen, I love Songezo Zibi. I think he's a great guy and I think he means well, just like I think Roger Jardine might be. I don't know.
Who funds Rise Mzanzi?
Why
don't we know?
Who does?
Why don't we know?
I don't know. You meant to know these things.
Where's this billion?
You're our sleuth.
Who is funding this R1 billion that was supposed
to parachute?
The people
that used to give money to Cyril.
That used to give money to Cyril.
So you got a lot of, if I may say, a lot of white corporate types who know very well how to make money but have absolutely no idea how politics works. At all. And they keep thinking.
And they try to hedge their bets.
All we need to do is make a better ANC. Like that's the only thing they got in there. We need a better ANC.
Yeah, because they made money.
The Mandela ANC.
They've made money.
No. They've also got the savior complex where they want to save South Africa. You remember when Zuma was around?
No, they've made a ton of, and there's guilt. They've made a ton of money over the last couple of years. And
they don't
guilt.
Want to save South Africa. They want to save their earning potential.
No.
What they are looking to save
that's a bit of,
is
a
where
bit of,
they make their money.
Only they have more money
and
than
where they make their money.
They have enough money to last a lifetime.
Ever stopped anybody?
They want their kids to have the same lifestyle that they have in South Africa. Simple as that.
Enough money has never been the thing that says to somebody, okay, I'm going to stop being an evil corporation now. They just want to make more money. Have we not learned anything from Purdue Pharma, right? So
yeah, and for some reason,
making
think,
enough money is yeah. not enough to stop a person from wanting to make more.
As part of the equation, no doubt. But a lot of these corporate guys think that because they can run a business, they know how politics works, and they always get smacked in the face. Kasira was useless. Mbeki was useless. They didn't support Zuma, which was unfortunate because then the Guptas and everyone else got hold of Zuma.
Thabo Mbeki was not useless.
They've destroyed everything. What?
Thabo Mbeki was not useless.
No, compared to the rest. No, not at all. It's probably the best president we've had.
In the land of the blind.
And yeah.
He was the best president we've had.
And for many reasons, right? We had an economy that was doing well.
We had a budget surplus.
And we paid debt.
We would take the Mbeki years without even a hesitation, a moment of thought. We would trade in 15 Cyrils for a rewind back to 99. We would.
Easily.
And I will remind you of telling you that we are going to miss these Thabo Mbeki years when you believed did say so. In Jacob
you
Zuma.
You did say so.
I think the money conversation is an important conversation because there's so much talk about who funds whom and why. And there's the billion rand that has been touted by everyone. Even Jacob Zuma a couple of days ago told us that he was offered 1.2 billion. And Jacob Zuma, who couldn't keep his hands out of the till when he was... The president of South Africa said, no, I've got principles. I don't want your 1.2 billion.
But I think it was in return for not national. I think it was in return for not nationalizing things. Is that correct?
Who funds him?
I don't think Jacob Zuma has any. I don't think anyone's funding that thing.
Oh.
Not to any big deal for now. Maybe the Russians, though.
What would be great. What do you think of the MK party? Now, I've heard conspiracy theories and I've heard very sensible ideas proffered by people who are intelligent and who I think have a pretty good handle on things, but I cannot make it up in my own mind. Whether this is just, again, like he's just run out of options and this is what he has to do, or he's got such resentment about the way ANC have treated him and he's just angry and he's lashing out and he's decided it's time. He can do this on his own and he can bring the coterie of people who have been on his coattails for such a long time with him. He'll get enough sustenance out of this to survive until he doesn't anymore. And it's just like this is his last ship. Or he just really doesn't care anymore. And it's like crash and burn, Stalingrad. What's going on here?
So I think it's a stroke of genius. I think it's really good to take the ANC's
He's very logos. Politically smart, this guy.
And very popular.
Very popular.
In KZN, 63% approval rating, Cyril 32. Mm-hmm. So there's twice as popular as Cyril, Jonathan is in like 20%.
And right? People have written him off, but he's not finished.
Not in the slightest. Not in the slightest. I actually drove past Nkandla a few weeks back. And
oh, you saw it with your own eyes.
With my own eyes. And I wanted to go to the front, but there were literally 30 BMWs like on the road to the front door. So I said, no, thanks. But anyway, he's very, very popular. What he has done is taken ANC identity, MK. MK was the only thing in the ANC that sort of worked during the 80s and 70s. It did, let's be honest. And he's taking that for himself. He was the intelligence officer at the time, if I remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
And now he's saying, listen, I'm not suspending my membership of the ANC. I'm still an ANC member, but I can't vote for it under Cyril because Cyril's a sellout to the whites. So what I'm going to do is take the elements of the ANC for myself, MK, and we're going to vote for this political thing. We don't know who the leaders are. There's no party list.
No, but he was busy reprimanding people for jostling for position just yesterday.
Already, yes.
Who are these people?
But what he wants to do, I think what he wants to do is, because he's so popular in KZN, he's basically not allowing the IFP and the DA to have a coalition there to take over KZN next year.
That's the underlying story.
So I think the leverage is, if he gets 10% of KZN and ANC's at 41% or so and the EFF's at 5, he could have that leverage to say, well, you know, we can take KZN, but only with me. Now imagine what sort of concessions he can draw out of that.
I think it's much more sinister than that.
More sinister than that?
I think it is much more sinister than that. I think what we are watching, and I hope that the intelligence are also paying attention, unlike in July 21, I think what we are watching is we are watching a dog whistle that is creating a quasi-military operation that is, and from the various things that we have heard him say, the pieces of video that we see, he is taking a very dangerous, narrow nationalist view of what the Zulu vote is in a vacuum where the IFP has lost so much ground, where the ANC is not strong enough in KZN, and there is no longer an elder statesman in the face of a Mangosuthu Buthelezi to hold it all together. We have a very weak king that has walked into the space, and we have a major unhappiness in the electorate as a whole.
And particularly in
KZN. Not just with the ANC, but particularly with Cyril Ramaphosa. I think it is dangerous to listen to Jacob Zuma say, I didn't know people, there were Sotho-speaking people in KZN, because he spoke about people singing Rea Morata Kaofela, you know, in all of the Ramaphosa, there's that song that they sing, and it's like, right? And what we are seeing, and using a paramilitary, decommissioned, yes, old people, but creating a space that says, we are going to fight.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
It's a dog whistle. And if anything, if we learn anything from our lack of concentration around July 2021, this man is gearing up to create two things. And he keeps saying and harping on about this, that the election is going to be stolen, that this, you know, we can't trust the IEC. So he's creating a distrust of the electoral process just to create enough of a space to foment violence. And that is why it is more sinister. That is why it's important for me to figure out who does pay for this. Who pays for the tents? Who pays for the PA systems? Who pays for the t-shirts and the cars and the all of that mobilizing that you see? And he is popular. He is popular, but also people are disgruntled, you know? This is why it is so much more sinister. And this is why it is actually very dangerous to have an organization that is a shadow organization. You don't know who funds it. You don't know who started it. It kind of says, Jacob Zuma, by the way, who is also the president of SANCO, which is an affiliate of the ANC in KZN. The fuck?
So here's,
this is much more dangerous than an 81-year-old man who is feeling unloved. So this guy was willing. Twice he was happy with the result of the IEC. He was happy with democracy. He was happy with the way that we vote and the way that votes are counted. He also spoke about, why are votes counted in secret? Votes are not counted in secret.
No, all
in
the
this
parties
country,
have agents.
Right?
No.
But what he is doing is subtly undermining
democracy.
The process. Democracy works for as long as it was working for him. Now that he's on the outside, maybe this democracy is not so
it's
right.
It's almost like he's a politician.
Do you have anything to, do you have anything to add? Do you agree with Pumi?
So I agree completely. I think perhaps he has some maybe he wants to become the warlord of KZN, very much like Mabuza is of northwest. Where was
Mpumalanga?
Maroshele wants to be the warlord of Free State. So these political parties are the vehicles to make that a reality. And let us not forget, people keep saying democracy is so important, the constitution, X, Y, Z. People don't vote here. No one thinks democracy is important in this country. The only people who think that are people in the media, people within 10 kilometers from here. The average person in this country does not vote. The average person in this country does not know who the politicians are. They have no idea what policies exist, under which auspices, under which umbrella of politics. Democracy is under threat by the ordinary people not voting for it.
But these ordinary people are extremely responsive when the president, the guy who's in charge right now, at least theoretically, goes around saying, they will take away your social grants if you don't vote ANC. And this is appalling. Appalling behavior from the president. Of course, it's a tactic.
But it's,
we expected it. But this is just not true. And of course, we have no one in a position to fact check him in the media because they're all in thrall.
Well, the DA tried to fact check him yesterday. But
and how did that go for them? Message get through? Do you think that the average person in the Eastern Cape, who you've just mentioned, don't vote, don't care, don't really know what's going on, you think those people aren't going to hear that message? You're wrong. They're going to hear that loud and clear.
No, they probably are.
There are two indications that tells us sitting here with our microphones and hopefully other people listening to us.
Sure. It's our best hope.
It also says to me that it tells me that the ANC is actually worried about the outcome. Because to have that conversation, a conversation that says, because they know that people are not going to go and read what the party platform of the DA says about grants and NSFAS. They're not, you know.
No.
But what they're doing is the tactic that they are employing is one that says, we are better than the other guys because we have given you this particular thing. And if you don't vote for us, they go, because they are hearing the rumblings of people that are saying, I actually don't care about you. I actually don't want to vote for you. You have done nothing for me. And so that response.
So I heard some internal polling going on. These polls are sometimes very, very inaccurate. But I heard that they're projecting the ANC to be below 50% by a small margin, but still below 50%, which sounds to me like about right. And that's kind of where the trends are going. If you've paid attention to who's our friend that we speak to about Davy Scholtz, who's our election guy we talk to every now and then, he pays attention to all the exit polls as they do the small municipal and ward elections across the country. And it sounds like it's probably going to be around 47%. What does that actually look like for a government, a national government?
Well,
put aside your anarchist tendencies and tell me how you'd evaluate that.
Well, I think the ANC will be very lucky to get 47%.
Really?
Yeah. No,
you think less is coming?
Less, yeah, low 40s.
Hmm.
Low 40s. They haven't solved the problems that cause people pain, like load shedding. The Minister of Electricity was 2 days ago. He's like, you know, our forecast for load shedding in 2024 is some days we'll have it and some days we won't. It's like the weather report. It's raining today. It's not raining today. So they've given up. Like they've given up on trying to solve this
particular
problem.
I do feel
problem,
like they have given up in so many ways. I mean, even Thandi Modise, who was talking about the borders and Gayton McKenzie, it's like she's going, well, that's wrong and he shouldn't do it and people shouldn't talk like this, but she's not doing anything about it. She's not like saying we're going to arrest the guy.
No.
So it's like, eh.
Everyone's given up for a large part. So assuming that at 45%, I think they can cobble together a coalition between good, if good exists, which I have sincere doubts about, good, ATM, those sort of small parties, the PA, they could get 50, 51%. If it goes where they are at 40% and the ANC needs a 10 or 12% party, a lot of people think EFF is a natural ally. I don't think so.
They're not. They do not. There's a huge group of ANC people who absolutely despise Julius and are terrified of him.
They are competitors in the same pool of votes.
Yeah.
And funny enough, whenever someone leaves the ANC, they never join the EFF, except if you call Niehaus, because he's a retard. But for everyone else who's not, they start their own thing, which is very interesting. Right? Why is Ace Bachashulid? Why did he start his own thing? Why did Jacob Zuma start his own thing? I'm starting to think maybe there's a big thing to have a big, broad coalition of the hard left, with the EFF being the center pin. But I can't see Ace and Jacob being second fiddle to Julius Malema.
No, they won't.
So I don't think there's a big coalition happening. But most importantly, I don't think they trust the man. I don't think they think Julius is that important as an individual. He's a bit of a cult. The EFF is a cult to him only, and the ANC is built on democratic centralism, and they can't understand and will never work with parties which are cults for the most part. Excuse me.
So I think this is a good time to have a conversation about the EFF and where the EFF are going into this election year. I've repeatedly said here that the EFF have plateaued.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I quote you often on that.
And I actually think that we are going to see them sliding back.
Agreed.
For a number of reasons. And the last press conference that Julius Malema held, which was in KZN, I think, is also very telling. the things that he speaks about, I think that he is a little bit rattled by Songezo, of all people.
Because really?
He spoke about him.
How so?
He spoke about him.
He asked who the funders were,
He only brings up people who are nipping at his heels. Yeah. He doesn't really talk about people he doesn't feel are a threat.
Absolutely.
He doesn't even discuss them, which is why he's never even acknowledged
because
Carl Niehaus.
Needs to, you know, because
poor Carl Niehaus coming
because
under
he
such
needs
fire.
To, he needs to point his flying monkeys at someone,
yes,
right? He needs
correct.
To point his flying monkeys at someone. And so this is.
Thank God a white person didn't say
God
that.
You said that.
Jesus,
it
we'd
is
be
a
in
reference
trouble.
To the Wizard of
I know,
Oz.
But
my
still,
God.
You know how people are. You know how people are. Go on.
But it's important, right? Is because you can tell that there is definitely a little bit of trouble in that paradise.
Also, why we haven't heard a single solitary sound from Floyd Shivambu or Buyiseni Ndlozi for ages?
Well, we still see Buyiseni is.
Do we
Buyiseni
hear them?
Is very, very concerned with Palestine at the moment.
Okay,
so
yeah.
A lot of what he talks about is right. Is
which really
the
doesn't
ICJ's
doesn't affect most South Africans.
Julius's greatest asset is Floyd Shivambu's silence. That man knows everything, and he's loyal to a fault. Kudos to him. I can't wait till he gets arrested because I think that is inevitably coming up. There's so much evidence against Floyd Shivambu specifically.
Yeah.
And if Floyd Shivambu turns coat, the EFF's dead. But we'll see how much that can happen. But Floyd knows all the dirty secrets. He knows exactly who funds everything, where the money goes, and he's loyal to a fault. Everyone needs, every political party needs a Floyd Shivambu. I mean, compare him to...
If he's loyal to a fault, Fikile. He won't sing.
Well, if you put him enough pressure, maybe. Yeah. But compare Floyd... To Fikile Mbalula.
Can't shut his mouth. So let's go to that for a second because I know we're jumping around a lot, sure. But there's so much ground to cover.
I told you.
Fikile Mbalula this week made comments about Gandla because he's clearly very irked by Jacob Zuma. And he's also Cyril's only real henchman left, right? Because the rest of them are kind of lickspittle, but also the ones that he would normally rely on are going, not really. We're not sure we want to pin our colors to your mast. Because what's happening in the ANC is you're also seeing people scurrying left, right, and center. And I mean that very figuratively. Fikile Mbalula went out on a limb this week, admitted that the ANC stood shoulder to shoulder behind Jacob Zuma during the Nkandla scandal, lied where it was necessary to do so. And he's now running wild trying to put out the fires that he started by this either slip of the tongue or purposeful and Machiavellian, if you believe he's capable of that.
No, he's a 3-year-old. You ask him something and he answers you truthfully. That's the beauty of Fikile Mbalula. I had children who were 3. They're older now. And you say, did you do this? And they'll say, yes. Because I don't understand the concept of punishment yet. That's what Fikile is like.
And he's never really been accountable for anything. No. So why would he understand punishment?
I think, though, if you consider who he was speaking to, the message landed. The message that he was giving out is a message that says, this guy, Jacob Zuma, when he was with us, we protected him, we did all, and now he's the snake that he is now gone out there to be against us. And the people that he was talking to will resonate with this because they will then say, Jacob Zuma, what a snake. They are not going to say, so you guys lied.
Mm.
They're not going to have that conversation. They're going to have the conversation.
Do you think he did a cost-benefit analysis?
They are going to take the conversation that Fikile was having with these people is a conversation that says, Jacob Zuma is a snake in the grass.
Yeah.
We protected him. He was when he was the leader here, and this is what we do. We protect our own. We lager around them, and that's the message they're going to take. The number of people that are having the conversation we're having that are saying, oh, these guys lied and they knew they were lying. All of that out the window for the people that he is speaking to.
Yeah, but he's speaking to 100 people there, but a million people have heard him say that, yeah, we lied and Jacob Zuma still screwed us, right? Shows a lot for your strategy. But even like Nhleko came out and he says this is the worst Secretary General in 112 years. I think Gwet Mantashe came out and says, you know, you media guys, you must let him learn. Like he's still young. Fikile's 51.
There's a great video going around of Gwede falling asleep. Yes. And like, this is recent. This is not like some old clip.
It was 3 days ago.
No, it was three days ago.
He fell asleep while Cyril was talking. This is how seriously these people take you. And this is how seriously they take their own colleagues in the party. He went to sleep. I mean, also, that can we stop? You just mentioned that Jay-Z is 81 years old.
He's an old guy.
All of these people are so terrifically old that at least Fikile, with his three-year-old state of mind, seems to be truly youthful in some ways. That's the only bit of youthfulness we have in the ANC at the moment. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm secretly hoping he becomes the next president.
Fikile?
Yes. Because then
God, you are just such a shit star.
You know Mencken, right? H.L. Mencken, yes. One of the greatest authors in the world.
Mm.
He had this quote, which I'm going to mangle completely, but he said, "One day the will of the people will materialize to such a degree that a downright moron will be in the White House." I mean, it's happened in America with Joe Biden, but imagine Fikile Mbalula being the president of South Africa. It would just solidify Retail Danistan like you cannot believe. We deserve it.
Guys, it's over for the ANC.
We deserve it as a nation.
All right, so
it's over for the ANC.
I'm going to take,
but we must now have a conversation because I'm looking at the time and we're running out of time and there's still so much to talk about.
All right, so let's talk
so
about
either we speak faster.
No, I suggest
or we choose one.
I suggest
more thing
we
to
look.
About.
You mentioned how Mbuyisen Ndlozi is distracted to the nth degree by Palestine, and today South Africa is making representations to the International Court of Justice, and they're going there to declare Israel a genocidal state. What do we make of this? Should we, as I mean, you know, the obvious retort to this, whatever your point of view, is that when Omar al-Bashir came here, we didn't take them seriously. And
so
now we're trying
court,
to. And,
huh?
No, I know, but, oh, right. But
this
they,
is
but
a
they
different court, but this
they
is the same court that Putin.
Well, this is the other thing, is that all you have to do there, and I think that this is part of the opposition, which would be Israel's retort to this, is to say, fine, but then why aren't you going after your friends, Russia? For the exact same reasons you're going after us against Gaza.
Well, and the first question is, who is behind this? South Africa didn't think of this on the
own. So where did it come from?
I don't know.
Iran?
Maybe it's Iran. Maybe it's someone in BRICS.
And South Africa's a patsy?
And South Africa's just a moron and retarded enough to go do it, right?
And what's going to happen in your estimation? Do you think that we're going to get our asses handed to us? Or do you think it doesn't matter?
I don't care.
It doesn't matter?
I don't care whatsoever. Like, really. It's a complete
so
what do you think, Pums?
I do care. I think since October, since the events unfolding in the past couple of months, we here on this show have had a lot of conversation around all of the parts of this. So one of the things I hated doing last week is reading the submission, the South African submission to the ICJ, which is 84 pages.
You read the whole thing?
It's only 84 pages.
Jeez.
You were ex-lawyer, so you know this about court documents. They're hell of a laborious things. They're boring things, and they're completely repetitive, you know, because you have to keep reiterating.
No, because you charge by hour.
No, besides the charging by hour. But read it. South Africa's document is an impressive document. It is not what you think. We've seen so many things coming out of this country. We've seen so many policy documents. We've seen so many submissions and white papers and all of that stuff. And they all look like mangled. Not all of them, but a lot of them are really like a manglement of stuff. Mm. This document is well thought out. This document is a vicious document. And they have quoted laboriously all sorts of points to which that they are arguing and which support their argument. And they are a terrible indictment on many people, including Netanyahu himself, in the Israeli government, in the IDF. And you must consider that what they are saying is there is this concerted effort by Israel at genocide, right? Mm-hmm. They want to get rid of Palestine and Palestinians. They are also saying that there is a deliberate incitement for a genocide And they have quoted many people and the things that they are saying and the tweets and the Facebooks and the this and the that, which was reckless to begin with. So it may not be what they wanted to say, what they intended to say. It may be exactly what they mean, right? But that evidence sits in front of this court. And this is, and you must understand that what South Africa is asking for is they are asking for the court to intervene and say to Israel, stop this, so that there can be a mission that goes into Palestine to figure out what's going on. This is it's the urgent interdict, essentially, is what they're putting in front
to
of
me
the
it's
court.
The biggest crock of shit I've ever heard in my life, to be honest with you, Pumi.
And that's
sorry
okay.
To interrupt.
No, it's okay. It's okay
when
that
you look at
that
war crimes of the past, since the Cold War ended, you've seen the war crimes perpetuated by countries around this world. Israel itself in Syria, Russia in Syria, America, everywhere. I mean,
in Afghanistan.
War is war, guys. People die in war. Absolutely. Hamas wants to destroy Israel. Israel now maybe wants to destroy Hamas. People will die. That is how things happen in life.
And,
right?
And that
and
is
for
not
South Africa
is
to take a stance in this particular thing, when their allies like Syria and Iran and Russia and China have committed ethnic cleansing of their own multiple times for the past 30 years, and no one cares. No one cares unless Jews kill someone. This is all that this is showing me. And I'm not a big Israeli guy. I'm not Jewish. I don't actually particularly care. But you can see the liberal anarchy here.
And
it's tyranny at its best.
Either way, on either side, right? On either side, there's tyranny at its worst, actually. And nobody's going to come out. I've said this before. Nobody's going to come out on the other side of this looking good. Not Israel, not America, not Palestine, not Hamas, not anyone. And the thing about this particular submission for me, for South Africa, right, is they've taken the stance for whatever reason. Whoever funds it, whoever is supporting it, whoever's given them this idea, they've taken the stance. They've gone all the way to this court, and this is an opportunity for them to ventilate their spleen about this particular thing. Great. I really do. I think great for South Africa.
Sure.
Great for Naledi Pandor. Great for all of the things. But the fallout is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
The fallout for Israel, no matter how this court goes, because it's going to ventilate all of this.
Israel's
shit,
fine. The
right?
fallout for South Africa.
The fallout for South Africa, politically, economically, is not going to be great. We wake up this morning and Morocco, who actually also has a judge in the panel that's going to be listening to this, is now Morocco over South Africa. Is now the chairperson of the UN Council Humanity, right? We wake up this morning to this news.
Yeah.
Morocco.
And what does South Africa
Morocco,
say about Morocco?
With all that's happening in the Sahara.
What does the ANC say about Morocco? Oh, they're ethnically cleansing the West Saharans. Sahararians.
But what this
them?
Also tells us is
it's named after one of Brad and Angelina's kids.
Yeah, your friends involved.
By over 30 votes in the UN General Council, Morocco trumps South Africa. Because South Africa and the exceptionalism that we have in our minds of who we are and the voice that we have is no longer there.
It never was
We are
there.
Not who we think we are.
It never was there, Pumi. It's all bullshit.
We are
because,
not who we think we are.
Just because Nelson Mandela went to an Oprah for 5 times doesn't make us great. We never were.
This is going
to
be...
We never were.
It's going to be... So, yes... At 11 o'clock, it's going to be telestreamed all over the world. I mean, journalists from all over the world have descended on The Hague. They can only accommodate 30 of them, but apparently they had like 100 submissions.
That's because usually no one cares what this court does.
It's going to be...
All you need to know is that the best people in this country, legal minds, went there. John Dugard, a legend. I forgot the other advocates, I do apologize, but they're also extremely competent, extremely capable. Those advocates,
and then they take Jeremy Corbyn.
Those advocates would never be appointed judges in South Africa due to their race, right? Those advocates would never be given a huge budget to prosecute corruption in South Africa. those advocates will take on this case, and he paid lots of money to go, you know, destroy Israel. They'll never be used in here in South Africa to the best degree of their capability. Because why? The ANC doesn't give a shit about the local people, and BE comes in and all that other stuff. But so we use these advocates to the best of their ability to screw Israel over. We'll never ever do that to fix South Africa. That's the essence of the story for me. Complete distraction.
Yeah.
It's a complete
Patrick
distraction.
Says in the comments, the ANC say we have a moral duty. Wow, the quiet diplomacy with Zimbabwe really worked. Russia invades Ukraine. What a joke. Yeah, so there's hypocrisy here. But
this is the thing about our foreign policy at the moment. It's all vibes, right? It's all just vibes.
The only minister I respect is Bandor.
Really?
She's actually really good. I don't agree with her. But as a minister and as a communicator, she's actually very good.
Okay, well, that's an interesting
I agree with
insight.
Her on some things. Yeah.
Okay.
She's actually been really good.
Whatever happens, and it'll be interesting also to see if South Africa are willing to take whatever the result is, right? Because they don't take the ICJ seriously when it doesn't suit them.
Yeah, correct.
They're willing to take the ICJ seriously. So that'll be interesting. But today, South Africa's oral arguments start at 11, and tomorrow it will be Israel's oral response to South Africa's argument. Whatever happens, it is worth watching, because this is something that a lot of people are going to be talking about for a long time, and it will have an impact on South Africa and South Africans. This is about who your friends are. This is about where you stand in the world. It's big pieces moving on the geopolitical chessboard. And I don't think South Africa knows that they're not an important piece.
Which is why perhaps we should support Cape independence.
Oh, okay. You want to bring that in?
Why not?
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I think we should.
This is such a thorny thing, because I don't know if the Western Cape could manage on its own. I don't know whether that's a possibility or not. Why are you in favor of this? Why do you think this is interesting?
South Africa, can we agree that South Africa is a colonial construct? Right.
Sure.
Constructed by the British.
No, that's why we've got Ndebele people and Matabele people.
That's why Eswatini exists. Sure, that's why Lesotho exists.
Right.
I mean, the Cape was British and the rest were Afrikaners. Then the British took over. And it's a South African concept. It's an imperialist concept, the borders of South Africa, when they do exist, which they don't currently. So the Western Cape has always been historically, culturally very different. It always has been separated from the rest. There was suffrage based not on race but on land ownership, if I remember correctly, irrespective of race. It always has been a far more progressive place than the rest of South Africa. In terms of economy, land size, it fits everything. It's bigger than Singapore. It's bigger than a lot of very successful small states. Okay. And at the end of the day, I mean, if fundamentally South Africa votes for the ANC in alarming numbers and in the Western Cape they don't, we do care about self-determination. It's in our constitution. We care about the self-determination of the Palestinians and the Western Saharians and whoever else. Why can't we care about the self-determination of the people in the Western Cape?
The Republic of the Western Cape.
Who are ethnically very different from the rest of the country. It's 50% colored.
It's apparently that's one of only two places in the world where you have a truly indigenous mixed race population. The only other one being in England. With the Caribbean Windrush generation,
of course,
changing the population composition of places like London, South London in particular.
So I think independence is happening de facto. Mm-hmm. Politically, it's already happening. There's already a separate police force down there through LEAP officers. There's already, the DA is useless in this regard, but they could have done a lot to privatize, but to bring the railway and the police into the clutches of the provincial government. I think it's really happening. The only problem is borders, which they can't or won't enforce. But I think it's really happening as we speak right now.
What do you have to say about Cape independence, Pums? Anything?
I think that the Western Cape is still very economically, still integrated into the rest of South Africa's economy. And I think that an independent Western Cape is a non-starter. I think it's a non-starter for many reasons. And interestingly, you say that, looking at what's happening in KZN, there will not be an independent Western Cape before there is any kind of secession conversation in KZN.
Which is why you should support MK.
So it really won't.
Which is why you support it just won't. Course.
And the conversation will remain a non-starter for a very long time, simply because there's just too much disparity. There's too much difference between, even as you say, ethnically different,
sure,
you know, all of those things. I think there's still too much of an integrated consciousness in the various
people. Too much grip from the Western Cape. Come on, Pumi. Integrated consciousness. What is this?
No, not independent. Interdependent.
But isn't that interdependent consciousness?
With the rest of South Africa. Nah. And that's why I think it's a non-starter. I think it's a wonderful conversation.
I'm very sorry that we're running out of time here, guys. We've run out of time. Very, very good start to the year. Lots to be excited about. There's a lot of enthusiasm about all of this, even though some of it is pretty dire.
So, I mean, just one last thing. It's an election year.
Yeah.
There's 200 elections this year across many different countries.
Yes.
I can't think of a less excited country than this one about the election. It's in May sometime, no doubt. It's 4 months to go and no one gives a shit.
I am so interested in this May conversation. Where did that come from?
I got it from three different sources. Because they can't do it in winter because they're worried about load shedding. And if they do it after winter, they give me stage 6, stage 8 load shedding for 3 weeks.
Except lose. A winter election is a good thing for the ANC.
Why?
Because people are less likely to show up and have few people showing up,
it helps them.
The DA wins. DA wants very low turnout because their people come out. The ANC guys don't come out at all.
ANC guys come out.
Well, let's wait and see. I'm excited about it, despite Raman not being. I'm actually cautiously optimistic are the words that I've used.
Just expect chaos and brimstone. Don't expect utopia, please.
No, I'm not a utopian.
Good.
Don't worry.
Either way, it's
going to
be lit.
Chaos and brimstone. All right, catch Raman on his own morning shot on YouTube. Lots and lots of people do, and I'm very happy that it's been such a success. You are you're a very unique thinker, and I like having your point of view here. So I'm sorry it's taken us so long to get you back.
Thank you for having me.
On the Burning Platform. All right, hell of a way to start the year, Pums. We will see you next Thursday.
Oof.
And everybody be good and look out for that brimstone. Cheers, everyone. That's the Burning Platform. We're out. CliffCentral.com.